The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hey there, welcome to the show. Adrian Healy back in the big chair. Lots of talking points to get to on this Friday. Sid Lowe will be joining us in a little bit to dissect what was a remarkable week in the life of FC Barcelona. But before that, let's start in the Premier League. Let's start with this three. What a trio we have. If you were building a five-a-side team, this would be some spine for you. Stevie Nicol, Frank Leboeuf, and Jan Agerfjordtoft, all the way down the middle. Gents, let's start in the Premier League. Let's start with what happened on Friday night. Wolves winning against Crystal Palace. That actually puts them into a tie at the top with Everton and Liverpool. Same points behind on goal difference. Obviously, Everton and Liverpool still to play. But very comfortable win for Wolves against Palace. Goals from Ait Nouri and from Podence. Stevie, start with you. Are Wolves for real? Are they genuine top four contenders, do you think?
Wolves are for real. I think we knew that already. The last couple of seasons, they've actually given us hope that they could maybe break in to that top four, but they're definitely contenders for the top four. I'm not so sure I'm ready to put money on them, but deservedly won today. Play some lovely flowing football. Got two goals and created more chances. But as I said, deservedly won it. And deservedly are up near the top of the table.
And Frank, they unearthed another French fullback who got his first goal for the club as well. Ait Nouri, are you buying what they're selling at Molineux?
Oh, yes. I mean, I was very impressed, you know, already last season. But this season, again, they're doing great and they're very well balanced. And it's true that buying that fullback, having his first game, I think he's only 20, not even 20, and scoring his first goal. You can feel that the club is like a family, and you could see that he had no stress and was already adopted by the others, so with the big Portuguese legend. But it's nice to see Wolverhampton playing. You see some clubs not involved and not pretending to be the top club in England, but doing great, playing great. You know, like I saw Southampton last weekend. They go forward, they try, they experiment well, and they have been successful so far. And I enjoy the game that I saw today. Crystal Palace tried to exist at the beginning of the second half, but Wolverhampton was so above them technically, physically, and tactically, and they deserve to win. Again, because of the balance that they showed and the way they play. Fantastic. I loved it.
And yeah, we've already talked a lot about how topsy-turvy this year in the Premier League is going to be. Does it mean that Wolves or a club like Wolves can be there at the end?
I don't think they will stick at the top four, but I agree with the two boys, the famous boys ahead of me, about what I said about the team. There is something about Molineux. There's something about Wolverhampton. I've been working there 3-4 times, coming there as a guest journalist. Is a great place to come to. And there's something about this that I'm impressed by English football. They can have foreign owners, foreign managers, foreign players, but still that atmosphere, a family club, historical, traditional club, and they manage to do their way. And I'm impressed by the manager. I don't, like Pete said, he doesn't try to do something else. They are very honest in their approach. Some great, good footballers in there, like Neves, and some good striking force going forward. So a team that is enjoyable to watch, and is also a team, although they also spend some money, it still gives us a hope that people can kind of knock from below also in the Premiership, but not only the big, big spenders being up there.
Well, talking of the big spenders, looking forward to the weekend in the Premier League, the standout fixture is Sunday lunchtime kickoff in the US, Manchester United and Arsenal. Stevie, what's your feeling about this going into it? It seems to have flipped on its head, doesn't it, in the last couple of weeks in terms of the fortunes of these two teams?
Well, yes, but I've got to tell you that as soon as I look at this fixture, as soon as I think about it, as soon as I think of Man United, I think Pogba's not going to play again. So your highest paid player, your most sought after player, your the face of the club isn't going to kick a ball. Because if he does, then the result might go against him. You know, Ollie's been going on all week about how great he was and against Leipzig and how he's getting fitter and waxing lyrical, I should say, about him. But he's not going to play, and he shouldn't play, because when he plays, well, they're just not the same. Fernandes has to be the free guy joining the attack. You need two sitting defenders, two sitting midfielders, that is. And it's going to be Fred McTominay. And it's not going to be Pogba.
Frank, as Stevie just said, Ollie was full of praise, wasn't he, for Pogba this week? Saying he can do everything on the pitch. He can play long passes, arrive in the box. And so is he really not going to play him?
Well, I think, Paul, if he plays, that's to show us that we are wrong. But I will go with Stevie. I mean, he has everything that the player needs to have when he wants to be a football player, individually. But collectively, he has to work tactically. He doesn't. And he makes the team unbalanced when he's in the middle of the park. And sometimes it's hard for the other players. Is he going to defend? Is he going to be involved, you know, in the defensive aspect of the game? Not sure about that. That's always a problem. You are sure with McTominay that he's going to defend and he's going to give 100%. As talented as Pogba is, you're never sure what you can get from him. And that's the main concern that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has to have, because that's up to him to get the right players to make sure you're going to keep on winning, especially against Arsenal.
Mm. Yeah, and it's a fading memory now, isn't it, when games between these two used to be title deciders. It's funny, you look at who they've beaten this year in the Premier League. United have only beaten Brighton and Newcastle. Arsenal's wins against Sheffield United, West Ham and Fulham. They haven't beaten either of them another big team yet. So who needs this more coming into Sunday at Old Trafford?
I think that Manchester United will bring another stat from the Champions League, beating PSG and RB Leipzig. It's true. I saw some clip the other day between the big games when Vieira was in midfield against Keane. I mean, that was one of those things. But I think that the big thing now is that the both club need to find themselves. How are they going to play? Arteta starting well, getting trophies, now two losses in a row. I think with Ole Gunnar, there is not a lot you can compare with maybe the greatest managers of all time, Sir Alex Ferguson. But what you see now with Pogba, he doesn't care about names. He put him out of the team. He can praise Pogba, but he won't play him because that is, he certainly will pay him, that's for sure. But play him is harder. And I think what Ole Gunnar has seen, that is to be that kind of club, you have to defend better and you have to build a wall around those two centre-half. Lindelof and Maguire looked very bad at the beginning of the season. But Manchester United, Arsenal being a big game, yeah, it's still a big game, but it's a game between two teams who try to find themselves. Not only what I did yesterday, it's all about finding the way to play today and what team they're going to be tomorrow. And there are two young managers out there, and you can bring Lampard into that gang as well. Three managers who try to find their way in the game. And sometimes we overdo their status because they were great footballers.
I don't know about who needs this more. I've been trying to figure out how this game's going to be played, because you've got two teams that, as you said, historically would come at you, grab you by the throat and squeeze you to death. At the best, Arsenal, Manchester United, that's what they did to you. But these two sides are identical. They are far better sitting tight and breaking on the opposition. So who's going to take who's actually going to force the pace in this game? I can't figure it out. Mm. Because we've talked all along about these two sides not good enough to go toe-to-toe with the biggest and the best. And so that's how they play. But how are they going to play against each other? I actually can't make my mind up who's going to actually force the pace in this game. Mm. And that's regardless of who's at home.
Any ideas, Frank?
Well, it's going to be complicated, but we're knowing that they can't really count on their defenses, knowing that they've been conceding many, many stupid goals. I would go for a draw, but I would say that we're going to see goals. Hopefully, we're going to see goals. You know, I was very pessimistic about the game Manchester United-Chelsea, and I was right. It was 0-0. I'm going to be pessimistic about that game, but hopefully, we're going to see some goals. Mm. Hopefully.
Jan, pick a winner for us.
Well, and I would probably say a Norwegian to win it, but I agree. I mean, it's hard to say because these teams, they need, well, Manchester United and Arsenal of the past, they were not just one who played on the opposition's mistake. And I was very high criticised after first half in the game against Leipzig because everybody said that Manchester United, they were so good at destroying what RB Leipzig did. But that is not a standard of Manchester United. But to be fair to them, and Steve and me discussed that after the game, to be fair to them, the second half they played brilliantly. And I think that Manchester United would take that confidence into this game. They've been looking okay after that 6-1 in the first set against Tottenham. So I think I will go for a Manchester United win against Arsenal.
Mm. And Stevie, even though you can't decide how it's going to be played and what the dynamics are going to be, pick a winner for us.
I think I'm going to agree with Jan. I'm going to go with United because Aubameyang has left his shooting boots in the dressing room for the last few weeks. So for that reason alone, I think Manchester United's forward line is superior to Arsenal's.
All right. Well, meanwhile, also on Sunday, Everton travel to Newcastle. They won't have the services of Lucas Digne. They will have James Rodriguez coming back. But Digne is going to be out. Frank, I want to get you on this because his suspension has actually been reduced. Remember, sent off against Southampton. I know you had to... a nice little ding-dong battle on the air about that on Sunday. But he's only going to suffer the one game suspension now. It's been reduced on appeal. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't know the all legal terms about what you can do, but I was told about a wrongful dismissal and only one game because of wrongful dismissal. But I really believe, because I was a football player, and I know when people do it on purpose and no. And I know that he kept his stats on the player's Achilles tendon. And for me, the three games ban were only normal for that kind of tackle. I don't understand why they reduced it. If they think that he didn't do it on purpose, he should have zero. The red card should have been dismissed. But normally, what some people and our director tonight explained to me that Everton appeal only on the two games ban and not on the wrongful dismissal ban is why he got only one game ban. Okay, let's say that's only fair. But I think the three games was fair because I know Lucadine. He seems to be a very nice guy. He has a very nice face, but he can be dirty at some points, like I was before. And I don't buy it. I'm sure he did it on purpose.
Well, if he's got a nice face, there's no way he should be banned for three games, Jan.
That is a great rule. That is a great rule. I agree with Frank. That rule by FIFA and the direction, if you have a nice face, right, only one game. If you have a terrible face, three. I mean, but I agree, Frank. It's unbelievable. You put in a protest and they say, you didn't steal the car, but we will still give you some punishment because we thought you stole the car. So I think that is a silly, silly decision, but at least it's down from 3-1 there.
Stevie, the FA explained it by saying, well, Everton appealed the excessive punishment rather than the wrongful dismissal. Does that clear it up for you?
Well, it makes them obviously feel better about it. It gives them something to argue about, but I'm absolutely with the boys. It's complete and utter nonsense. Whether he meant it or not, to me is immaterial. It's reckless and it's put somebody's career in jeopardy. So he's lucky he only got a three-game ban. And the fact that they've come turned around and said that, well, it was excessive punishment is absolute and utter garbage and complete and utter nonsense.
Mm. All right, continuing the Premier League look ahead, Spurs play Brighton. Of course, they're coming off the back of that horrendous display in Belgium, losing against Antwerp. It wasn't the display that caught the eye, it was Mourinho's display after the game and his rhetoric throwing plenty of players under the bus in the process. Frank, you first on Mr. Mourinho once again.
Well, let's say I like the face when he was on the bus, you know, saying that he wasn't happy and that he was hoping that all the players were going to come in will be like him, unhappy about the performance. That's only fair. And I think coach has to show his angriness, I don't know how you say, but the thing is, I didn't understand what he said during the press conference after the game, when he said about the players that they were wrong, but they have to decide, and now he cannot say to the press, you know, why that guy doesn't play. Now you will know why they don't play. Well, that was complete nonsense for me. I didn't understand at all. I don't speak very well English, but I think it was worse from Mourinho. So let's say that Mourinho is doing Mourinho. He's a fantastic actor. We're all going to say that the players were very bad, but that he's hoping something better against during the weekend, and that everything's going to be perfect in the world of Mourinho if they win and they do well. But I think for some players, if you want to read between the lines, it's going to be very, very difficult. And I'm thinking about Dele Alli. I think very, very difficult to be in the first 11 if they carry on playing like that.
Mm. Yeah, and what did you make of it? Peak Mourinho, wasn't it?
No, first of all, it was typical Mourinho. You could say that first he parked his bus in games and then he threw his players under the bus. I mean, the math is still good. But I don't like that attitude from a leader, not only talking about Mourinho, but I don't like that attitude from leaders that when you win, they say, I win. And when you lose, you say, they lose. And yes, that may be being the kind of second team of Tottenham playing there, but still, he still needs those players. It's a long season in England. He will need him again. There is a transfer window first in 2-3 months coming up, so he needs those players. And that is not a way to kind of... I think they used to use that tactic, and maybe in the old days that was a good tactic, but this fragile young generation and players of today, that doesn't work. I think that it's more like Frank's business in Hollywood. It's all acting, I guess.
Mm. Stevie, having been on both sides of that fence, you've seen this plenty of times before. Go on.
I usually am with Jan on this, and I usually criticise Mourinho for flinging players under the bus. But I think there is a time that you can do it, and I think he actually got his time and spot on, because they were awful, they were atrocious. And he normally singles out people, but he didn't. He threw every single one of them into the mix, which I think helps, you know, because nobody's going to say, well, he picked me out of everybody. He basically said everybody, and he was correct. And I also like what he said afterwards about he learned some things about some players, because that 11 that was out there was... I mean, they should be... The majority of them should be doing every single thing to try and get in this Tottenham side. And I think what he's saying as well, I know there's a couple that are just not really up for the fight, and they're not people I can rely on. And I agree with Jan that you can't, you know, you have to rely on players, because you don't know what's round the corner, whether it's suspensions or injuries or whatever. But I tell you what, I think there's a couple of them that have gone absolutely right out the back door and might never see the light of the light of day again. So I'm going to agree with him. I think he timed this right.
Well, I was going to say, do you think that's going to get response out of any of those players that were indicted?
Well, it has to. I mean, my goodness, the first team goes on a 10-game winning streak. You try to figure out as a player, how do I get in this team? And the only way you can get in the team is either by somebody getting injured or suspended, or something that you can do on the field. And so when you get a chance in a Champions League game and you show a bad attitude, wow, that's you deserve all the criticism you get from whether it's the manager or anybody else.
All right, good stuff, gents. We'll roll right along. Just a reminder what the Premier League fixture list looks like this weekend. Manchester City travelling to Sheffield United. Liverpool at home to West Ham. The late game on Saturday, all the way through to those two games on Monday. Fulham and Leeds United, the home teams.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Well, they say, don't they, that a week is a long time in football, and Exhibit A would be the past 7 days for Barcelona. Just think of what they've been through, starting off with the defeat in El Clásico, a defeat that was termed as a robbery by the Catalan press. That was quickly followed by all the conspiracy theories surrounding VAR, Barcelona releasing a statement imploring the Spanish Federation to take some action, saying VAR is directly benefiting opponents. And then how about this? How about the whole board resigning? Josep Maria Bartomeu falling on his sword and leaving quite the firework in the room as he departed. And then, just for good measure, playing Juventus in Turin in the Champions League, Barcelona without Coutinho, without Piqué, and they trounced the Serie A champions, a 2-0 victory that could easily have been a lot more. Some week, wasn't it, as we welcome in Sid Lowe to the show. Sid, even by Barcelona standards, you've covered them for many, many years. This was a pretty dramatic 7 days, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, look, on one level at least, the departure of Josep Maria Bartomeu wasn't a huge surprise. The question mark was always going to be the timing, whether he was forced out as a result of the no-confidence motion, whether he was going to then somehow find a way through that and continue until presidential elections, which would have been in March, or whether he was going to walk away, which, of course, he eventually did. And that perhaps was the surprise. But, yeah, it was quite a week. And you know, you've got the Clásico to start it all off. And to be honest as well, the response in Turin against Juventus was absolutely fantastic, in part because it was so unexpected. Given the kind of pressure that Barcelona had been under, given the fact that Clásico was a third league game in a row that they'd been unable to win, of course they'd drawn with Sevilla, they'd been beaten by Getafe, I think most of us, and I do include myself in this, most of us expected them to go to Turin and to get beaten. But they didn't, they responded really well, and it's by far and away the best performance they've had since Ronald Koeman took over as manager.
So, Sid, a couple of things on the Bartomeu resignation. First of all, the mic drop moment, of course, the European Super League. Javier Tevez, the Spanish Federation president, coming out and saying, listen, this is nonsense. But it's also been a dream of Florentino Perez's, the Real Madrid president, for some time. What's the overall reaction been?
Well, it's curious, you know, because I think the majority of Spanish football fans are opposed to a European Super League. This, of course, caused quite a reaction, but it hasn't had, I think, the traction, certainly at a popular level, that perhaps it has in other countries. What Tebas said, look, bear in mind that Tebas is president of the league, is determined for this not to happen, so he partly says what he feels he has to say. He's also, as you will have surely noticed over the last 3 or 4 years, very, very bullish about almost everything he says, so he very rarely holds back. But it was perhaps a slight surprise to suggest that Josep Maria Bartomeu had been put up to this by Florentino Perez, the president of Real Madrid. And I think when you take a step back, quite apart from all of the intrigue, if you like, of the European Super League, just take a step back and strip that down to basics. What we're essentially saying here, or what the president of the league is essentially saying here, is that a president of Barcelona is doing what the president of Real Madrid tells him to do. Mm. I mean, that in itself, I mean, of all the accusations you could level at a Barcelona president, to basically accuse him of being the puppet of Real Madrid is really quite something. But the most remarkable thing of all, perhaps, is that there are some Barcelona fans who are incredibly critical of Bartomeu who would, broadly speaking, agree with that.
Mm. And then, of course, so Bartomeu departs. Barcelona go to Turin to take on Juventus. It looks to be hopeless for them, doesn't it? And yet they turn around and produce an inspired performance. We've had many former pros on the show here debating whether Bartomeu's resignation had anything to do with that display. Did it for you?
I don't think so. I mean, look, subconscious level, it's very difficult to judge that. And Sergio Roberto, who was the person who faced the TV cameras post-game in the Super Flash pitch side, he was asked about this. And he said, well, look, this is the best possible response to everything that happened. There's not really a lot else he can say. Ronald Koeman said, look, we're here for the football and the most important thing we can do is focus on the football. It's impossible to judge whether there was some kind of, if you like, extra element because of the departure of Bartomeu. I suspect not, or at least not at a conscious level. But there is absolutely no doubt, you know, make no mistake about this, that there will be players in the Barcelona squad. I would probably argue that the immense majority of the players in the Barcelona squad who are delighted to see him go. In fact, I think even those who didn't necessarily have anything against him will probably feel that it was the right thing for the club, that it was necessary for the club. That said, I think they're realistic enough to know that this doesn't automatically resolve all of their problems and automatically make everything okay.
Mm. So I want to get your thoughts on what happens now for Barcelona. The favourite to succeed him is Victor Font, isn't it? And Spanish presidential nominees have a history of promising big things, don't they, before taking post, players and coaches. And Font has gone out and said, hey, listen, Pep Guardiola, I can get him back to the Nou Camp. Is that real? And what happened to Xavi?
No, I must admit, I think there's lots of elements to this that mean we should back away from it ever so slightly. The first one is that I think that Font's point, although it's possible that there was a little bit of mischief making as well, or it's possible that perhaps he has really big plans beyond just what he'd already put in place. I think his point really was a broader one about the fact that people who've played a big role in Barcelona's history, people who seem to embody what Barcelona is all about, should come back. Not necessarily Pep Guardiola, or not just Pep Guardiola, but people like Carlos Puyol, like Guardiola, like Iniesta at some point, like Xavi. And that's the next part of this. This is said by a man who has already been very, very public, very, very clear and very forthright about the fact that Xavi is his new manager. To the extent that he said, look, if I take over and Ronald Koeman's in charge, I'm sorry, but it's Xavi as my manager, and we can try and maybe find a role for Koeman, but Xavi is the person that I want in place. Now, he did say last week that, well, you know, we try and talk about this, and there are other roles that people can play, and there are other positions that can be fulfilled, which made you think that he was backing away from it, maybe even made you think that perhaps things are not quite so clear-cut with Xavi. So I think there's that. I think the other element is that Guardiola himself said that he's happy at City, that he wants to stay, that he would like to continue beyond this year. And then there's one final element, which, of course, that while he probably is the favourite right now, Victor Font, elections are still some way off. We still don't know for sure where people's voting intentions lie, and so there's no guarantee that he wins. So I think to make the leap from this to Guardiola is coming back, I think, is too much of a leap. But it was very, very interesting to hear someone say that quite as directly as that, and at least gets people talking about it for a while and gets people thinking about, I wonder if things could change, because one thing is absolutely for sure, Guardiola was never going to return with that board of directors. If there was ever going to be a chance of him returning, Bartomeu and also the kind of people who are associated with Bartomeu, Sandro Rosell, for example, the board of directors that would have been people maybe presenting themselves as continuity candidates, none of those guys can be in place if there's ever going to be a chance of Guardiola returning.
Mm. Well, in the aftermath of that Juventus victory, Sid, Ronald Koeman did some talking, didn't he? And he actually said some nice things about Antoine Griezmann. Lo and behold, shock horror, we've been waiting for this. So what did you make of it?
Well, it was curious, wasn't it? Because Griezmann actually played very well, but it was also one of those games where you came out of it again feeling sorry for him, again feeling like things just don't work for him. He had a couple of good chances. There was that one opportunity, for example, where he just completely missed the ball, but I thought he played very well. And I think Koeman sees that. And I think what Koeman has been doing, bear in mind that he left him out of the Clásico, and as you pointed out there, he's been very, very forthright in saying, Griezmann hasn't performed. Griezmann hasn't got a reason to complain. He said there was opportunities. He's been very direct and said, well, he had two chances and he didn't take them. And of course, implicitly saying that's no one's fault but his own. But I think what he has seen from Griezmann is a good attitude. I think what he's seen from him is the right approach to training, the right approach to trying to convince him to try to win his place back. And I think he's trying to encourage Griezmann to continue doing that. So there's been quite a lot of stick. I think there's now a little bit of carrots, which, by the way, isn't a guarantee that Griezmann continues to play, because if you look at that forward line, you don't necessarily put Griezmann in it, given how well Ansu Fati's playing, given how brilliant Pedri was in this game and in the previous game, given how well Trincao had played in the previous Champions League game, Coutinho's playing off the front. There are a lot of players for only a handful of positions, so I still think this is no guarantee that Griezmann starts playing.
Mm. Switching tack just a little, Sid, last time you were on, Real Madrid, of course, had just won the Clásico. Everything looked to be finally heading in the right direction. Then came the midweek trip to Germany, the Borussia Mönchengladbach struggles, and then, of course, the aftermath, or what emerged after the game between Benzema and Vinicius and Mendy. Supposedly, the air has been cleared now, according to Zinedine Zidane. What's the overall reaction been in Spain?
I think the reaction has been that this is really quite a big deal. And I think that part of the reason for that is that there was a sense that Real Madrid had some flaws. They had some footballing flaws. They weren't scoring enough goals. But there was a sense that there wasn't a particularly significant internal problem. But, you know, this was, largely speaking, a pretty good group. A group that got behind Zidane. A group that was basically reasonably united. And then in the last 5 or 6 days, we've had footage of Isco complaining about getting a few minutes. And then this footage that you're talking about, which, of course, is Ferland Mondi and Karim Benzema on the way out in the second half. And Benzema saying to Mondi, look, don't give him the ball. You know, because he just doesn't give it back, he just doesn't pass, and he's effectively playing for the other team. Now, there's a whole series of caveats that can be thrown in here. Firstly, we don't know 100% for sure that it was Vinicius that he was talking about. Secondly, players say these kind of things. And thirdly, I think that actually what he said wasn't a million miles off. I think the really crushing remark is that one about how he's playing for the other team and don't give him the ball. It wasn't just, look at this guy not passing. It was, well, tell you what, let's not give it to him either, which I think is actually really quite significant. I must admit, I thought it would blow over quite quickly. I think it's been a much bigger issue than perhaps I anticipated. Maybe that was naive of me. Zidane, as you say, says that this is dealt with, that it's done now. I don't think he can say anything else. And you know what will happen now, without any doubt? We will all be watching the Madrid game with the calculators out, with the abacus, trying to work out how many times Benzema and Vinicius pass to each other. And the other thing, of course, that will happen, precisely because we will all be there watching that, is you can bet your life that Karim Benzema this time round does everything he can to give Vinicius the ball as often as he possibly can.
Sid, I've always loved the description of the balance of power in Spain between Barcelona and Real Madrid being like a set of scales. Like, one is up, the other has to be down. There's no room for both of them to be up at the same time. But at the moment, quite frankly, it looks like both of them are down. Who has the upper hand at the moment between these two?
Well, I guess the Clásico victory means that Real Madrid do, but neither of them feel, I think, entirely convinced by what they're doing at the moment. Neither of them are entirely sure about what they're doing. And I suppose one way of putting this into that scales is say that, you know, this is within the context of expectation. And of course, we know that this is a new Barcelona team with a new manager that's in transition. And so perhaps for Barcelona, it may well be that it's slightly easier to take bad results than it would have been in the past. So, for example, that 3-1 defeat against Real Madrid last year might have been enough to put an enormous amount of pressure on Valverde when he was in charge, and then, of course, Setién when he was in charge. But with Koeman being only 7 weeks into a new season, trying to change things, that very clear idea that there's a kind of a moving on of players, that there's a rejuvenation of the squad, that this is a younger team, I think actually meant that was accepted rather more than would normally be the case. And so right now, you're right, it does take one up, one down, although after the Clásico it was very much Real Madrid up. And it does feel like neither of them completely convinced, which opens up one other question, which is, could we get a real challenge from outside the big two this year? Now, from a neutral point of view, that would be a lot of fun. The problem is whether that's a challenge based on the flaws and the if you like, the lack of quality from the big two, rather than because the rest of the league has suddenly become very strong.
Sid, great stuff. And like the true pro you are, you've teed up the end to this segment by previewing your article that you've just written on ESPNFC.com about how wide open the La Liga race could be this year. Sid Lowe, thanks so much.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Big birthday today. Diego Maradona turns the big 6-0, if you can believe that, 60. And he has a birthday wish. He says, I dream to score another goal against the English, this time with the right hand. Yeah, Frank, one world champion to another. What do you reckon?
Happy birthday, Dieguito. And Keep it quiet, please. Keep it quiet. We're not in the Malouins war anymore, you know. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, really, don't. Why do you want to make people upset, you know, for something you did wrong? You were a fantastic player. The second goal that you scored that game was an absolute beauty. But that was so ugly, the first one.
Yeah,
don't mention it.
You are on record, Frank, as actively disliking more than any non-Englishman I've ever met, Diego Maradona's Hand of God goal.
Yeah, I think it's only I hate injustice. I hate everything who shouldn't be accepted, and saying that what he did is the end of God. I'm sorry, I can't buy it, and I don't want to buy it, and I don't want to accept it. I think it's really ugly, and it will keep it ugly until my last breath, sorry. Mm. But I want to wish him a happy birthday.
Stevie, I know you had a rather different reaction to that particular goal we've been discussing.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. That was brilliant. Thank goodness. All I can say is, thank goodness there wasn't VAR back then. Otherwise, I'd have been destroyed. You probably wouldn't get away with it now. But I would have no problem with it. Don't you listen to him, Diego?
Yeah, I'm sure. It should be historical.
But Frank is very much against handballs like Thierry Henry did against Ireland. So hopefully his principle in those decisions, which I think he is. But I think we have to congratulate Diego Maradona. In 86 at the World Cup, he was fantastic in that. And back in 90, he came back in 90 in Italy. He was a bit fatter, but he was still fantastic. And remember, in 94, he was fantastic in those games as well. But then he was drugged up, and then he was thrown out because of drugs. But what a man. And I guess we've all seen him now lately. I mean, the biggest thing that he has achieved, I guess, is to reach 60. We have to be honest about that.
Yeah, that was probably in doubt for some time, wasn't it? Go on, Steve.
I've found something I've got in common with Diego Maradona at last. I'm a little fatter than I was in 1990.
That's about it. Just a tad.
Yeah. There's been a lot of footage of him waltzing around the Scottish midfield as well, in the one trip he ever played to Hampden Park. Yeah. Great stuff. Diego Maradona, one of the all-time greats, perhaps the all-time great. That's a conversation for another day. Turning 60. Stevie and Frank and Jan will stay with us for extra time, answering plenty of your questions, including an Eintracht Frankfurt question, Jan, you'll be pleased to know. Well, this is what lies ahead this weekend in terms of the Bundesliga schedule. All games, remember, available on ESPN Plus, starting at 10:30 Saturday morning, all the way through till Monday with that Hoffenheim Union Berlin game. Let's preview a few of them for you. Jan Agafjortoft joining me. Let's start with the big two, Jan, both in action away from home. 10:30 a.m. Eastern on Saturday morning. Bayern Munich travelling to Cologne. Dortmund away against Bielefeld. Any slip-ups in prospect for the big two?
Well, the latest rumour is that Bayern Munich have been travelling to Cologne without Robert Lewandowski, and that is some goals not travelling on that probably train this time. But no, Bayern Munich have scored 31 goals now in all competition. That's seven games, and they will trash Cologne. I predict the 3 or 4 nil win for them in that game. I'm more suspicious that something could happen in Bielefeld because Dortmund, away from home, sometimes they don't look like that Bayern kind of thing, that they just come there, they win the games and then they go home. I was there live, saw the game against Lazio, and you can't compare Lazio with Bielefeld, I'm not saying that, but they look very miserable away from home, and there were so many players without out of form. You maybe had Haaland who did well for them. So this could be the little slip up for them against the Bielefeld team with Fabian Klose, a legendary striker, but still he hasn't scored this season. Maybe this will be his big game. So if we will have a slip up, it will be Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, and if there is a headline action in the Bundesliga games this weekend, it's probably RB Leipzig and Borussia Mönchengladbach, isn't it? First against sixth, and two teams who had very different weeks in the Champions League too. How do you see this going?
Good point. I mean, Rose, the Gladbach coach, been doing so well against Inter and Real Madrid, and have been unlucky that they haven't won both of them in the last minutes. They've got an equaliser against them. And then on the other bench, you will have Julian Nagelsmann. Imagine you coming to England, they're talking about this wonder kid, this fantastic young coach, and then you lose 5-0. And not only that, you have the worst suit ever seen in English football. So we'll see how they will react. I think that they will try to come straight back to it. Like you're saying, they are leading the German Bundesliga, and this is a big one. A Gladbach team that you also love to see because they love to play entertaining football. Two teams that I think that you will have a look at this weekend because this could be one of the most entertaining games on the fixture list in all leagues this weekend.
Okay, Jan, thanks very much indeed. Also, thanks to Sid Lowe. That will do it for today. Coming up next, though, on Extra Time, Frank and Stevie will be alongside Jan to answer your questions. And away we go with a Friday edition of Extra Time. Adrian Healy with the pink paper in front of me containing questions. Actually, a couple of mea culpas before we get to Stevie and Frank and Jan. A couple of mistakes made on the show. Stevie made one of them, saying Spurs were in the Champions League. They're not. They're in the Europa League.
Yeah. Europa League.
I also made a mea culpa. James Rodriguez, I said, would be available this weekend.
Slip of the tongue.
And he is not available. He will not be playing against Newcastle. All right, so that's the housekeeping.
So are you saying, no. Are you saying that Ian and I didn't make any mistake during
no,
that show?
No, you were faultless. Jan and Frank, zero mistakes.
Thank you.
It had to happen eventually, didn't it?
Quiet, please.
Yeah.
All right, Frank, you take this first one. Dan, the Orange Man, is Mendy the best value signing of the transfer window now he's only given up one goal in five games?
So maybe too early to say that, but it's true that he made a huge impact, knowing that Chelsea was throwing at the back, especially with Kepa in goal. And I followed the guy when he was in Rennes, and then after last season in Rennes, absolutely fantastic player. And if it's not the top signing of the new season, is a huge signing for Chelsea. That's for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Apparently, it's not even the best goalkeeper at Chelsea. Peter Cech is, they say.
That's right.
Yeah, true.
He's still ready to put his gloves back on, isn't he, Mr. Cech? Frank, on to the next question. Frank McManaman. Stevie, you take this first. Did you ever play for a manager who you knew was getting the sack in the following weeks? And did you feel guilty that your team's performances were the reason they were getting sacked? Or did they deserve it?
No, I can't say I ever knew. Listen, when Souness got the sack at Liverpool, it came as a bit of a surprise, to be honest. Mm. Everybody afterwards was saying, "Oh, how they they thought it was coming and this and that, but I certainly didn't think that. And he actually got sacked for as much as what he was doing off the field with the newspapers as what he was doing on the field. So I really can't think of anybody. I really can't think of anybody. No.
Well, that's because you
can't think
for
of one that I knew was going to get the sack.
That's because you play for those Liverpool teams. They didn't sack anyone. Right. They didn't need to. That's why. What about you two guys, Frank?
No, nobody that I knew. And I think it was... I had lucky coaches, you know. They didn't know before the game that they were sacked. They were sacked after the game, but nobody knew.
Right.
I think it's better for them.
Jan?
I played in Germany, so these two boys, they played all over the place, but I played in Germany. That was useless. We had to do players, so I had to get rid of a coach after 8 games. He tried to punish me, tried to take me to the president's room, and I told him, if you don't get away from me, I will get the lawyer of O.J. Simpson, who at that time was Johnny Cochran. And then the vice president of Eintracht Frankfurt would say, listen, I'm a lawyer too, so I can help you. And then I knew I won the game. And yes, he was sacked 1 week later.
If the glove doesn't fit, Jan, you must acquit. I hope you use that line when you were talking about Johnny Cochran.
That's what you call player power, that.
Exactly.
All right, on to the next one. Anders, I'm not quite sure what inspired this question, but he wants to know who the least athletic teammate you've ever played with was, and actually, who was the most athletic teammate. And Stevie can't pick himself for either choice, says Anders. Stevie?
Oh. Least athletic. Listen, obviously big Jan Mulby used to get pelters because he was a big lad.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what?
You know when you're as good as Jan was?
You don't need to run around like the rest of the idiots.
Right.
You just keep the ball and pass it around. I'll tell you what, we had a goalie at Sheffield Wednesday, Kevin Pressman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't particularly impressed with his particular...
You couldn't get much past him, Stevie.
Abilities.
I played with...
You couldn't get any food past him, I know that. The easiest thing you get past him was a football.
I played with a goalkeeper in Sheffield United. I won't mention his name. Simon Tracy was his name. He was a fat goalkeeper, a great lad. And I went from Sheffield United to Barnsley, and then we played him 3-4 weeks later, and Simon Tracy was in goal, and he said to me in the tunnel... He said to me, Jan, I know all about your chips. And I said to him, the only chips you know about is the one you're eating every day. And after 20 minutes, I scored against him with a chip. And I mean, I had a great go at him all that game. He was a fat goalkeeper. He was a good goalkeeper, though, it had to be said.
Were you at Swindon at the same time as Neil Ruddock? Because he was another guy that was always...
I came to Swindon where we came into the Premier League with the youngest team, and we went out of the Premier League as the oldest and the fattest. And yes, we had some fatties around there, exactly.
Frank?
I had the chance to play with a great goalkeeper, Ed De Hooy, but for sure he was the least athletic player I ever seen. He already had a fat tummy, you know, and no abdominals whatsoever. But a great goalkeeper, he did well, you know. And and also I have to add Vinnie Jones at the end of his career. I played against Vinnie when he was playing for Wimbledon. He wanted to play the bad guy still, you know, like he does in his movie. But he was fearless, I have to say, at the end. The last year, that was a real suffering for him. But he was struggling.
He was a future actor at that point, Frank. And you know what those guys are like. Jan, this one all for you. Stephen wants to know what you think of your old team Eintracht Frankfurt so far. Will Frankfurt ever be good enough to play in the Champions League, or are they forever stuck as a middle-of-the-pack team trying to avoid relegation every year in the Bundesliga?
Well, I think they've done all right. They had some great striker with Jovic and Rebic and Haller, and they were all sold for one season. Then they kind of did well in the European League, as we remember. They started this season quite well. Then they got trashed at Allianz against Bayern Munich, as all teams do. But yes, I think they will. Eintracht Frankfurt, I think they will have a chance to go into the Champions League in 3-4 years, because thank God the English have decided to leave Europe. So Brexit will make Frankfurt the financial capital of Europe. So they will use all that money to put that into Eintracht Frankfurt. So thank you, England. You have given us Champions League in Frankfurt. Thank you.
Boris Johnson, Eintracht Frankfurt fan. We didn't realize it at the time. Vary funny, actually. Was there ever a hard man teammate in your playing career who would watch your back in games and sort out any opposing players roughing you up? Or were you that very guy in your teams? Stevie, you had some pretty
easy
hard men in those Liverpool teams.
This is the easiest. Yeah, this is the easiest answer of all. Graeme Souness.
Yeah, yeah.
If anybody got anything from anybody, and the thing was, you know, in the early 80s when he was there, you basically had two cameras, one up one end and one up the other. So if any retribution was needed, he wasn't averse to just basically doing it in the middle of the park, but generally, it was always in a crowded penalty box, at a set piece of a corner, and there'd be somebody left sprawled on the ground. I remember semi-final of the Champions League, 1982-83. The best player on the side we were playing, he broke his jaw at the top of the box at one of our corners.
Yeah.
And then the good thing about it was, when we played the second leg at their place, we were on the bus. And as we got to the airport, they all had signs. They were all after Souness for knocking out their best player. And we were all on the bus, pointing them out, because we were like that. He's over there. He's over there. So they kept getting him, and they kept moving around, and we kept pointing them out. And then just before the game started, when we were warming up, somebody passed the ball to him. And by this time, the stadium was full. So there's like 40, 50,000 people in there. And every time he touched the ball, they booed. So it was one of them. We kept passing it around to everyone, going, right, any chance you get, give it straight back to Sui. So he was getting the ball every 2 seconds, and the crowd was going, boo, and then down, boo, boo. Every 2 seconds, they were booing him. It was fantastic. It was so funny.
Fantastic.
But no, you didn't mess. Hey, you didn't mess with him.
Yeah.
You always come out. If you mess with him, you come out second best.
Yeah. Frank, on those Chelsea teams of yours, were you the hard man? Was it Dennis Wise?
Yeah, we had a little dog, you know, you can bite your calf and never let it go. And that was Dennis White, that's for sure. The captain was there all the time. But I had the chance to play a year with Erland Jensen. I think Ian knows that guy very well. A beast, very much
Big
a beast.
Erland.
Fantastic guy. Oh, Erland, you could go to the war with him. You know, you didn't risk anything. He would have saved your life. Amazing guy.
Yeah.
Alan Johnson, my roommate in different national teams up to the national team. I was the only player, and when I shared bed with him, I had my shin pads on.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Wharf 2000, Stevie, Liverpool's Champions League win against AC Milan, one of the best comebacks ever, of course. I remember watching it with you. What's the biggest comeback that you have been on the receiving end of as a player or a coach, I guess?
Well, there's one as a coach. We were 4-0 up at halftime against Philadelphia Union. And we came in at halftime, we got in the coaches' room, and I said to the other coaches, I said, by the way, this game is not over. Because I knew what we had. Mm. And I ended up being right. We actually should have lost 5-4. They missed a chance in the last minute. We ended up drawing 4-each. But I was nearly on the end of one at Leeds United, at Elland Road. We were beating them 4-0 at half-time. Mm. And it's very difficult to explain to people, but when you're 4-0 up at half-time, it's just, I don't know whether it's human nature, but something happens and you just take your eye off the ball. And it just takes one goal and the other team get going. And we were away from home. and we actually ended up winning 5-4. Mm. They got back to 4-3. The crowd was going absolutely crazy. And actually at 4-0, 4-1, they were singing the Monty Python song all round Elland Road. Always look on the bright side of life. But I'll tell you what, with 10 minutes to go, when it was 5-4 to us and they were still throwing balls in the box, it was absolute pandemonium. So that was a close one.
Hanging on for dear life, yeah. That's amazing. Frank, any...
Absolutely.
Comebacks?
Nothing that I remember. Yeah, nothing about that I remember about, you know, a game against me where we were winning 3 or 4-0 and we lost. I remember a game, a FA Cup game, that we were losing 2-0 half-time against Liverpool. And Mark Hughes came on and changed the game and we won 4-2. And it was a typical British weather game, you know, sort of. And that was crazy. And Viali scored 2 goals, I think. Mark Hughes scored 1. Zola scored 1. The stadium got crazy at the end. And that was fantastic. I think it was the game of the year for Chelsea, of course. And I will always remember that game because it's a typical English game where you think that, okay, we're done. We play against Liverpool. They are fantastic. Fowler, McManaman, and so many others, you know, Berger, I think. And it's impossible to come back. And suddenly one guy comes, Mark Hughes, and it changes the temper, the mentality of the players, and we won 4-2. Fantastic memory.
Remember that game very well indeed. Jan, ever see any huge leads evaporate?
No. I think sometimes great comebacks is also Dom, the boys have been talking about that. There's a great culture in the club, a great coaches, and never left the team die. I remember I played by Rapid Vienna, we played an Ernst Happel team. And for those who don't know Ernst Happel, he was in the 70s and 80s, one of the greatest coaches in the world, I would say, with different clubs, Ernst Happel. And we were 2-0 up against Innsbruck. And they got a man sent off 15 or 20 minutes to go. And he kind of changed their system. And somehow we're ending up losing 3-2. So I think sometimes big comebacks is also a mirror of a culture, a mirror of the will and a culture in a team and at a club. So I think that must be the closest I can think of.
Mm. All right, VBG next. He's a distinct member of the Frank LeBeuf fan club. This is for you, Frank. Are you still doing any acting? Do you want to still do acting in the future? Your appearances in films and plays have been great, says VBG.
Thank you, VBG. First, I just finished a play. I was on stage in Marseille and close to Paris last week. But unfortunately, with the confinement, we had to cancel the last two performances and have to wait September 2021 to be on stage again. I would be fully concerned about the ESPN and not doing anything else. Movies, I'm not really keen on movies. I have to say I'm impatient, so I'm bored. Like, you shoot like 2 minutes per day in movies and this goes too slow for me. So I'm not looking for any castings whatsoever, you know. If somebody wants me, you know, we can talk about it. But really, I'm not into movies. So I'm waiting for another play, which is something that I really love.
So there's going to be no Theory of Everything Part 2, Frank, the return. Not on the cards.
I don't think Eddie Redmayne is available. I called him and I'm not sure he wants to be with me again because he felt the competition.
Yes, you outshone him. Those 3 minutes were brilliant, Frank. I love them. Okay.
That's it.
One final question from Dan. Dan Kaida, that is. I hope we'll eventually get to the whole FC crew, he wants this question. To those former players on the show, what's the best advice you have for someone over 40 and still in pretty good shape who's looking to start playing the game?
Which game?
Never too late to start.
Unlucky!
Buy yourself a bake. Yeah.
I always thought that after 40 years old, it's always dangerous to play football or any collective sports like rugby or American football. Because even when you play before, especially us, you know, in our level, our head, our brain thinks that we still can do stuff when the, in fact, the body doesn't follow. So it can be dangerous. So it's better to quit and, I don't know, play golf like Stevie does very well.
But I think that there is always a chance that when you start playing, you can always be linked to Manchester United in the transfer window. So there is always a chance for you. So just keep training. Maybe change your name to Dan Sancho or something like that, and you'll always have a chance.
Dan Sancho. Stevie, I know you have played a lot of over 40s and over 50s football. And there are a lot of nutters out there, aren't there?
Well, the problem is, actually, most of them are not nutters. It really is down to what Frank said. Most people have no understanding of controlling their body when they're running at a certain speed. And so, A, either they're going to hurt themselves, or B, they're going to hurt you. So, as I said, get a bike.
Get a bike.
On a motorbike.
Yes, indeed.
It's effortless.
Get a bike is what we will end that show on. A good free word.
There you go.
On your bike. Thanks very much, gentlemen. Indeed. Join us for the next edition of ESPN FC. We'll review all the Saturday action. There'll be plenty to get to as well.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.